Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm like, hell yeah, you have sex during tournaments.
Looks like an Old Navy knockoff bargain bin kit.
Don't you love her? She's great.
Who doesn't love me?
No, not you, you idiot. My mic isn't quite.
You're a tall lady.
Yeah.
There we go. Renee.
Caitlin.
We're back.
Hey, we are back. I know.
Barely.
Everybody.
We barely made it back.
We've copped a lot of abuse on Twitter. The odd Instagram message. Where is the pod?
Where's the podcast?
When are you coming back?
Come back now.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so I'll be perfectly honest because it's not really your fault. It's more my fault. I was a little busy at the start of the year. I was coaching, I was doing television, and then, you know, you got to get players for a good 45 minutes at least for this pod. And to get players to sort of give you 45 minutes of their time is a little tough, even for me. To find time between my schedule and their schedule on the road, it was a little tough. So, you know, we kind of put it into the back burner for a little bit, and we thought, and you came up with a great idea.
I mean, in my mind, we were always going to do season one and season two. Because you need a minute.
Yeah, it's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you got to take your time.
Keep the people waiting.
That's right.
Speaking of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yoy.
How did you feel about the ending? Let's have out your honest, true answer.
I thought it was unearned. And I feel like it was a show about a sociological study that turned into a show about a character-driven arc in an unearned manner.
Oh, my God. See, this is why you're a journalist.
You shouldn't have asked. I don't know what to tell you. Look, the Game of Thrones used to be like The Wire. It was more about the systems than the individual people.
Breaking the chains.
Exactly, breaking the wheel. Then, in the last season, they decide to make it like this character-focused drama, and people are doing shit that you're never like. You're like, that's not your character to
Denny?
Do that.
Well, but wasn't it Denny's, really, when you think back to the start of the show? She was a little cray-cray.
She was always unapologetic. I kind of mean more like Tyrion. All of a sudden, he like can't figure out how to like conduct a battle, or Sansa, or the Cersei Lannister. All these guys are doing dumb stuff, and you're like, no, no, no. You're in your positions of power because you're ruthless. So what happened? Now you guys are making dumb decisions. So Danny, but also the rest of the characters.
Yeah, I think in the end, like my thought was, listen, the Starks got what they deserved, which was to rule the world.
That's true.
Right? Because they were the real, they were the honest, good people. Like deep down inside, they were the good
people. See, this
people.
Is what I'm talking about. This is a character-driven conclusion as opposed to a system-driven conclusion.
All right, enough about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, nobody is here
Because we could go
this.
on and on.
Nobody's
about
here for this. But you know what's great? We took our time. We got some amazing interviews this season. I'm really jazzed about it, obviously. Yep. And if you look at season number one, we launched it right around this time, June.
Yep.
And this next season,
Chrissy Evert.
With Chrissy Evert. It's hard to top Chrissy Evert. We could never top Chrissy Evert. We have somebody who sits along the pantheon of stars as our first guest. We'll get to that in a minute on this season. But before we do, we thought we'd spend this episode sort of catching everybody up. We got a ton of questions, a ton of response when you pulled out the call on Twitter about what people wanted to hear us talk about. Turns out a lot.
A lot. And I wrote them all down.
Game of Thrones was not one.
It was not one of those.
Nope.
But I'm sure everybody was thinking, what did we think of Game of Thrones?
Great point.
I mean, come on.
Who doesn't
want to know what you've got to think? So we got, as you said, we got a lot of, and it's during the French Open that we're doing this. And, you know, we turned the TV on them. Watch a little bit of Tennis Channel, coverage of the French Open. And I will say, for the first couple of days, Tennis Channel Plus not working. And there's a lot of Twitter hate.
been
including
a bit rough.
Me.
Yeah.
Because when you pay that money, you want that stuff to work. And yeah. you've got a one major for the year. You got to get it right. Come yeah. on. For 2 days, you couldn't even see matches on Tennis Channel Plus. Right?
I just assumed it was my phone or
app. Yeah, I know
app.
You did. You're like, my phone's not working. Well, we're watching the match at a bar, not drinking.
We were having brunch.
We were having lunch.
Yeah.
And I was getting it through my TV, like my
cable
through my phone, and you were trying to pull up the Tennis Channel app because we were trying to watch our buddy Andrew Pekovic.
That's right, who won a
brutal
gutsy
match.
First round three setter against Ali Resk.
Yeah, I mean,
but we were watching Serena simultaneously. Tennis Channel, now it's back. It's better.
Back.
I'm delighted to see that our girl Mary Carrillo. Shout out to former podcast Lindsay Davenport, obviously, is part of the Tennis Channel. You know, a lot of love for elements of the Tennis Channel. The app experience the first couple of days, not great.
Good.
Hopefully it will be better. Because I pay for it.
Hopefully it'll just work for the rest of the tournament. Because thing is that the great thing about streaming now is that, you know, whether it's Tennis Channel or ESPN, is that you get to watch other matches. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to watch Rafael Nadal or Djokovic win 6-2, 6-2, 6-1. And sit on that match for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Not even. So it was an hour and a half.
No, but me neither.
It's like it's a blowout. It's boring. Like, let's get to some really great matches. And there's a lot of great matches. And that's the thing about TC Plus and also ESPN when they're streaming is mm-hmm. that you can flip over to those other courts and watch actually good tennis that's entertaining.
Yeah, I'm always here for the first
drama.
Rounders instead of the blowouts. I don't care about seeing the stars. I want to see a hard-fought match.
Well, one of the things that was discussed was just yesterday when they had to stop a lot of really great matches in the third set. And my first thought is, hello, how about some lights, French Open?
It is interesting.
Like, you build a freaking roof, but you don't put lights. Like, and I know that it's a problem because of the neighborhood. It's kind of like at Wimbledon, there's a cutoff time.
Yeah.
But the cutoff time surely is not 9 p.m. It's surely got to be at 11, like at Wimbledon, you know, where they have the lights. And at every other tournament, we play under lights in Rome and Madrid, whatever. So why is it the FFT can't put some lights at least on center court or on a couple of the match courts, the bigger match courts, so we get the match done? Because it's so unfair for the players to have to come back the next day. First of all, it's a freaking nightmare to sleep on that. And you don't sleep. We've got to get up the next day, play a match. And then you subsequently then have to play the day after. So.
Well, I also think it's probably not fair to spectators who buy a ticket want to finish the match. Because you hear them booing. And they're not booing because the players aren't making a great effort or because they don't love tennis. They're booing because it has to end, right?
Yeah.
And it's strange. If you're not going to build lights or if you have some sort of like ordinance in the neighborhood, like Boulogne, which is the neighborhood in Paris where they play, or in Wimbledon Village, which
is the
same.
De Boulogne.
It's near the Bois de Boulogne. But if you're never going to build lights, then why not just start matches earlier?
Yeah.
Is 11, like...
11's fine. 10 would be brutal. It's tough. I mean, the thing you have to understand when you are a player, when you play a match at 10 o'clock, and our buddy Andrea Pekovic will tell you about this, she hates playing that early because it takes her a long time to get her body going because she's old. She's had a few injuries. but you know, you got to get up at like 6 in the morning to get going for a match at 10 o'clock at least. You know, you're warming up at 8:30. Maybe, you know, 8:39, then you're having to stretch and get ready and shower and for a 10 o'clock match. So, I mean, you have to get really, really early, which everyone's like, oh, why not? Golfers do it. But it's physical, you know, physical matches tennis. You got to be ready from the get-go.
And golf's not a sport, as we can.
Yeah, it's a game.
It's a game.
It's a tough game, but it's
a
game.
Sure, it's a game. It's
so,
like darts.
So a lot of people brought that up, Caitlin, about the lights.
Yeah. Bummer.
Hawkeye was another thing.
Ooh, Hawkeye and Clay.
Now, I would go through everybody who sent us the question. Should we do that? Like, give them a shout-out? Or it's just too complicated? I've got the questions written down. You know who you are. Okay?
Thank you if you submitted a question.
Yes.
The Hawkeye thing, let's stay with that for a second. So Hawkeye, as we all know, the electronic sort of line-keeping system in place on many, many, many hardcore events, obviously, the slams.
Mm.
Not
and on grass.
And on grass, not on clay, because there is this theory that it is off, and it's so off on clay that it renders it virtually unusable. So instead, it's the one surface there you see the umps getting out of their chair, going down, inspecting ball lines, pointing, and then calling
doing
it on the fly.
Doing the little squiggly, roundy, see, I can see the round hole.
Yeah, okay. I love that, personally.
You do?
Yeah.
So you want to keep no Hawkeye on clay?
I don't know that it's accurate enough to trust... It.
Let me tell you something, Caitlin.
You might know better than me.
Let me give you the opposite argument of this.
you
cannot trust umpires, okay?
Yeah.
You cannot trust... I mean, I'm not saying they're like in it to like screw you,
but
their eyes aren't perfect all the time. And you do see often on clay, for example, and they clean the court, and then they do the lines with the little brush, right?
Yeah, I love
so
doing
when
that.
They do the brush, it takes not only the clay off the line, but it actually leaves a sort of a little bit on the side as well. So I don't even know how to describe that to people out there that haven't seen it, but mm-hmm. They're not just cleaning the line, it's outside of the line. So if a ball hits just off of the line, for example, you don't know if it's hit the line or not because you don't have any clay there.
Yeah.
The clay has been swept off by the little sweeper thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not accurate as well. Like the sight for the umpires. And I mean, yeah. We've seen some absolute huge blow-ups, including myself on the court, where I've had an umpire come out of the chair and I've pointed at a mark that I've seen it didn't hit the line because the clay didn't come off the line, blah, blah, blah. And they come in, no, it hit the line. I said, it didn't hit the freaking line.
Well, there was a really horrific ending of the match. Riley Opelka, I think it was in Lyon the week before the French Open. Match point, third set tiebreak. The ball, he felt, was clearly long, and subsequent sort of Twitter analysis makes a pretty compelling case that it was long. There wasn't a great camera angle, but it seemed pretty clear that it was not in.
Type of guy, also, that wouldn't blow up.
Doesn't seem like a blow-up kind of guy.
Dude.
He seems chill.
Yeah.
Match point, guy hits it long, he puts his arms up to celebrate, umpire calls it in, gets out of the chair, argument ensues, ends up losing the match. Three points later.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now, here's the opposite.
You can always call out the worst-case scenario to make the argument, but in that case, it's horrific. I mean, this guy loses a match.
Look at the year before. Karolina Pliskova in Rome, like, basically tried to be a lumberjack and take down the umpire's chair with a racket.
Yeah, she sure did.
And everybody's seen that video. I mean, that ball was inside the line. It wasn't even... It was either on the line or inside the line, but it was definitely not outside of the line. And the umpire claimed that she couldn't find the ball mark. Oh, no. No, came out of the chair and pointed at some random mark, and it was like, dude, that wasn't even close to where it was. So for me, the bottom line is, and this is how I feel about Hawkeye, it takes away the human element and the human decision.
I don't have any problem
and
with that.
There's no one to argue with.
Yeah.
If you're a player, you know, if you got screwed on a Hawkeye, even if you thought it was wrong, you know your opponent's going to get screwed on a Hawkeye
as well.
It's
the same system.
It's the same system.
I agree with that.
It's not sitting up there. It's blind judgment, and that's what players like. And you don't want to have an argument like an Opelka situation. He would just say, challenge, and if the Hawkeye said whatever it was, he wouldn't argue it.
He would just know it was the system. I agree with you. And furthermore, so you've changed my mind, and furthermore, whenever the...
It's always my goal.
Well, congratulations. Whenever the audience at home sees a better version of the game than what is on the screen... Whether it's baseball with the strike zone or a call in football or whatever it is, it's frustrating because if we have the technology to show the people at home a better mark, then certainly that should be what's... I've just heard the Hawkeye and clay is not reliable, and that's not the case?
We have the technology.
Okay, great. Just moving on.
Okay, so...
Lights,
Hawkeye,
late nights,
game, set, match.
Game, set, match.
Another thing was a little bit about... from Kimmy, I do know this, was about the scheduling going into the French Open. How
being Kimmy, shout out to Kimmy.
Kimmy, yeah. How it is to get a schedule right, you know, and a lot of players, for example, pull out the week before a French Open or a Wimbledon or a Grand Slam. Someone in Ash Barty's case who was scheduled to play, you know, Rome, Madrid, Strasbourg, French Open, like, why would you do that as a player? And I said the reason is because players pick their schedule because they have to. They have to do it months in advance.
Yeah.
There are certain tournaments that you have to play, depending on where your ranking is at. You have to play those events in support of those events.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of them sign up because they think, well, if I do shit in Rome or in Madrid, I need matches before the French Open. So they enter those tournaments thinking it's a bit of a backup, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, of course, you know, someone like Ash did very well in Rome and Madrid, probably felt like she'd had a ton of tennis already, which she has, and, you know, pulls out with an air, you know, I'm doing air quotes, injury, and, you know, pulls out of the tournament to go to the French. And I said, well, why do they enter? I said, well, they don't really have much of a choice. So it's kind of a shitty system, but also at the same time, tournaments have to promote the players and put them on posters. So it is a bummer when they pull out.
Yeah.
But it's sadly, it's the nature of the beast. You know?
I have two points of feedback there, one of which is my general attitude is to always sort of support the player, believe the player, do whatever makes the player in the best headspace, physical space to be able to compete, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm pretty sympathetic when it comes to coaching or scheduling. Like, I always like to give them the benefit of the doubt because it's just so insanely hard what they do. And the second thing is, and this is kind of more of a broad point about media, but, like, I would like to go back to a day when the tournaments didn't rely so much on who's coming and more about, you're going to see some great tennis.
Yeah.
you're going to be in a beautiful place. Yeah. You're going to be in a great city, and we've gotten a great field for you. Full stop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that, to me, is why I go. I don't... Ash Barty's not going to be in the...
You are a rarity. I won't say you're a rarity. If you're a tennis fan, that is a true...
Yeah. I'm here for the tennis.
Yeah.
There's many people I like, yeah. But my day is not going to be ruined if I'm not going to say, oh, no, Vika's out.
Oh,
like,
no,
I can't...
Benoit Paire. Ugh,
God bless him. Benoit.
You love him, don't you?
I do.
He's your favorite.
Maybe.
Really?
I love the Lunatics. What can I say?
Okay.
I love the Lunatics.
We're friends.
Exactly.
Okay. So that was it. So that's another reason why. You know, they do have to take care of them. And guess what? Sometimes there are legit injuries where they really aren't good. Look at Petra Kvitova, who had to pull out, you know, the day
Look,
before.
I'm willing. If an injury is a mental health or exhaustion, that counts to me as an injury.
All right.
You know what
so
I mean?
Mental health was another one that was brought up. How difficult... is the mental health side of sport in general. And I can answer that question, and it's very important. You know, one of the things that I wish I'd done when I played was meditate, for example. I don't think enough players do that because it sort of pulls you away from the ups and the downs and the positives and negatives. And you know, I'd say a lot of players will tell you losing is really hard. It's really emotionally hard on you. You go into these dark places and, you know, I think it was Katie Swan who wrote something recently about how difficult it was and the expectation on you. And plus, you have to remember it's your life.
Yeah,
like, it's
your
how
life.
You make money. It's how you get through. And everybody out there will know
but
if
it's
you
not
lose
just
your
job. I mean, it's like it's a 24/7 job. You're in it all the time. You can't clock out at Mm-mm. 6 and be like, okay, well, I guess I'm done. Today was a shit day at work. I guess I'll just stream Game of Thrones. It's like, no, you're in a foreign city having to deal with like now a 10-hour flight home with, you know, oh, I lost before I was supposed to.
Yeah,
kind of
or match point, or what if I'd done this? And you ruminate over these losses so much, you know, and it's only one winner every single week. And you know, it's often not you. So having to deal with that is tough. And now you've got the social media aspect of everything. So, you know, these players are getting, like, whether it be because, you know, people are abusing them on social media because they bet on the match.
That's abhorrent.
That's just, it is so...
If you're a shit sack person who's berating a player, especially if you're getting misogynistic, racist, whatever, just walk into traffic. I mean, just no thanks. Like, get out of here.
Get it. Come to New York. Don't look up. Just walk. Okay?
Just
walk into traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, if you're betting on anything and then you think someone's, like, done something, you know, mischievous to you and it deliberately lost, give me a break.
Yeah.
You're betting.
Yeah.
You're betting.
Yeah.
On sports. Like, it doesn't happen where the winner is supposed to always, you know, is the favorite. Right, I mean, I bet on the Kentucky Derby and got screwed, right? Because the horse got taken down because it sort of took out three horses, and that's the way it goes. I mean, I would have won money.
Yeah,
lots
these are
of money.
These are human beings that people are jumping into. And shout out to Madison Keys, by the way, who's done an incredible job and continues to do an incredible job talking about bullying. Really, Fearlessly Girl is her nonprofit, and also pulling in a ton of other women, both and men, both on the tennis world, from the tennis world, but also outside, to sort of talk about, like, let's not abuse and bully people. I mean, Jesus Christ, we have to tell people not to do this stuff. Like, I'm a mom. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm ready to take some twigs to people on the playground. That's how it feels.
Take some toys to people?
Twigs.
Oh, twigs.
Yeah,
it's not really going to do much.
No,
Kate.
It's not. I forget I said that. Anyway,
all right,
so
that's aspect of it. So basically, yes, it's very, very hard. And there are a lot of top players that will tell you they've locked themselves in hotel rooms for days and not come out.
But shout out to people who are talking about it and making this, you know, not only if your job is insanely difficult, but just generally mental health. Like, talk about it.
Talk
go to therapy, self-care, meditate, whatever you need to do. Like, that's, I really
You're
applaud that.
You're not alone.
No, absolutely not. And
basically,
I think that that's an amazing thing when we have athletes who are talking about how Kiki Bertens is another one.
Yeah.
Close to retirement 2 years ago.
Mm.
Now number four in the world. But a couple years ago, she's thinking about hanging it all up because she's just like, this life is punishing and grueling.
It's punishing
and I need to find
grueling.
My
hard.
Happiness.
It's really, it's hard because it dictates your happiness.
Yeah.
And that's what sucks. And a lot of people say, you know, that's why, you know, Roger's a bit of a unicorn because even when he loses, he's pretty okay.
Yeah.
So, well, he fucking wins all the time. That's why. But, you know, and he's got $100 million in the bank. So that helps.
Sure.
All right. So on to another subject. Let's talk a little bit about some of the players. Somebody asked me about Jo Konta. It's nice to see her back doing well.
Totally.
And why? But I'd say she's a little bit like Muguruza in some respects, the way she hits the ball. She hits the ball real flat. Really sort of very deliberate with everything that she does.
Mm-hmm.
So when the confidence is there, then she's super accurate with everything. You know, groundy, serving, her confidence is up. But when the confidence goes down, there's no real game plan B. So mm-hmm. not a lot of feel to her game. You know, sort of like Muguruza.
Yeah.
And she's on. And they are similar in the way that they play, I feel.
Yeah.
Everything starts with the serve and then the groundies. So, but on the aspect of having her back in finals and doing well, yay.
Yeah. Like, totally.
You know, golf clap for Joe, because we need her out there, and she's a terrific player and a great kid. So
it seems like a lovely person. And actually, maybe this is wrong, but it seems like she managed to pick up some steam from Fed Cup. She
yes.
came.
Yes, good point.
And Bolter and Swan and Heather Watson, one of my favorites. Like, these guys dug deep and kept Great Britain in the world group with a pretty gutsy win over Kazakhstan. Not a lot of people watch Fed Cup. I'm dropping like Kazakhstan.
And people don't realize how many players are from Kazakhstan. A lot of transplants.
A lot of Russian transplants. Yeah, exactly. Putin Seva, namely. But like, what I loved about that is a team competition, a sort of not widely viewed, at least not in probably this country, competition, gives this kid some wind in her sails, and then she gets back out there and has sort of a resurgence this year. So I think that's really cool. I mean, you could look at Djokovic and Serbia's Davis Cup, mm-hmm. you know, strong showing as the start of his streak where he like won. I don't
everything.
Know what it was, 40 matches in a row or something like that.
Another Nole slam. It's pretty impressive. It's amazing when you think about the fact that we've got Rafa going for possible 12.
Yeah.
You've got Novak going for a possible Nole slam again.
Yeah.
And you've still got Roger up there competing the way he is and winning, you know, 100 titles in Miami and then subsequently what he's done since. But it's like we have the greatest period of men's tennis at the same time. You've got the three greatest players of all time are playing at the same time. I mean, men's tennis is really lucky, but FYI, they will be retiring soon.
Yeah,
which brings me to one of the next questions about when do you retire?
Like, when do you retire?
What's the catalyst between? All right, I'm hanging them up.
Yeah, and the question was centered around Federer, who's now 37, Venus, who's 38, 39,
38, going on 39.
You know,
Serena's
obviously
Maria Sharapova with her injuries, mm-hmm. etc. When's she gonna retire?
What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit mixed bag, to be honest. A lot of it, you know, and Roger's even spoken about this, physicality. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, you know, the injuries, and it just becomes too much to get injured and come back 3 or 4 months later, which isn't a tremendous amount of time for somebody who's in their mid-30s. So it's like putting the work in to get the rehab done, blah, 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 particularly if you have enough money to retire and never worry about it, which a lot of these players obviously do. But and then it's the mental side of it. You know, Chrissy Evers, I spoke to her about it, and she said that it was a lot more mental for her. It was just emotionally, it was just too draining. Plus, she wanted to have family and blah, blah, blah. So obviously for women, some of it does come down to that. Like, also, when is it right to stop? And Casey Dellac was talked about that. She wanted, and she was playing really well in doubles, making a lot of money. And, mm-hmm. you know, that sets you up for your life, right? And her girlfriend was like, "Hey, sure, you don't want to play a couple more years?" You know? She was making very good money. So that's a hard decision. But for me, I was old. I mean, relatively speaking.
What were you when you stopped? 42?
I'd go back to 39. 43? No. I was 39, I think, was the last Grand Slam. And I think I stopped not long after that the next year.
Yeah.
Maybe I was 39 or 40. Mm-hmm. But it's putting in the hard work. It's like doing all the everyday waking up and knowing you have to go to the gym and go to practice and the ups and the downs and the travel and being away. And if you're, you know, really happy in your personal life, do you want to travel? Can your partner travel? That becomes hard as well. You know, do you have somebody who's got a 9-to-5 job that can't take off and travel with you all the time? So I think a lot of it has to do with that. It's where the men are pretty lucky, because usually
they have an accommodating woman.
Yeah, but
more
it's
often
not
than
so
all.
Easy for a guy just to hang it up and sort of travel with these women.
It's a bit of both, physical and mental. I want to shout out to the gentlemen, Jonathan and James, who do a really fantastic podcast out of Toronto called The Body Serve. It's the best tea serving podcast there is out there. A lot of gossip, a lot of hot takes. It's really great. I love it. And they said something to me, because I was like, oh, God, yeah, Venus, man, why isn't she hanging it up? And they were like,
she loves it.
You don't get to decide. We don't get to decide when these players hang it up. Yeah. If they are having the time of their life out there, if they are finding the motivation to do all those hard things that you just talked about, I think of somebody like Svetlana Kuznetsova, right? Got a couple of slams, made all the money she needs. She's doing great. I mean, follow her Instagram if you want to see somebody living their best life. She's in Italy right now.
Yeah, but she's not playing well.
She's not playing well, but you know what? Who are we to decide that she should hang it up? If she can still get into tournaments and win them,
hey man,
great. It changed my mind talking to those guys, because I was like, you know what? You're right. It's not my decision. If they can still play it, great.
Some people will go down, like someone like a Lisa Raymond always said, look, if I'm not doing well, if I'm not having the results I want, I don't want to freaking do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like
I get that.
I've had a standard of X and I don't want to be at AB. Mm-hmm. I want to be doing well. I want to be winning. If I don't feel like I contend, that I can contend to win tournaments, I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah.
So there's some top players that have had great success that really feel that way. And there's some that just go, like Venus, for example, who just love it. They love playing. They love practicing. They love having a purpose. I mean, Roger's like that.
Yeah.
He loves playing tennis.
Yeah.
He loves the adoration. He loves the
everything
about it.
Venus and Roger are still making slam finals. You know? Like
Serena's going to be interesting for me for the rest of this year and maybe next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much, because, you know, she's got this beautiful baby with her all the time. And, you know, she's got a lot of interests outside of tennis now, which she's always had. But I just, you know, at some point for someone like Serena, for example, if she's not winning the tournaments, that's a person that would be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You know, like if I'm not really contending, obviously, look, last year, two finals of Grand Slam. So she's still contending. So I think that will, she's that type of, for Venus, I think it's a little bit less. But for Serena, if she's not winning them or getting to finals and really contending, that's when at times she'll be like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to prove anything to anyone anymore.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
While we are talking about Serena, and you mentioned Nadal a little bit earlier, let's talk about fashion. This is something that on my other tennis podcast that I record very intermittently, on The Main Draw.
And it was asked of us by a lot of people on Twitter.
We talk about fashion. A lot of people want to hear our take on fashion. I'm ready with some very blazing, blazing takes.
Okay.
The Nike kit, the sort of basic generic Nike kit, Kyle Edmonds in it, Borna Koric, Vika, Daria Kasatkina, like...
Kasatkina.
That's right. Look at my pronunciation.
Don't you love her? She's great.
Who doesn't love me?
No, not you, you idiot.
Caroline Garcia. It's kind of this like power clashing tulle Nike black on white kind of weird pattern stuff. Mm. I love it. I think it's really cool and weird, and I'm here for it. It's kind of a lot, but I like when the brands do something a little crazy, and I think for the most part they carried it off. Two notable Nike exceptions. Holy shit, does Rafa look bad? What the F is that outfit? The shoes, it's a nightmare. It's just, it's like neon blue and yellow, and there's some kind, it looks like an Old Navy, like knockoff bargain bin kit. And then Del Potro, also not, they gave him some sort of like the off brand, kind of like there's a brown in there and like a mustard yellow. No, just everyone looks cool in that black on black. Just keep it black on black. I think that's great. Two others. Federer,
what?
So bad. He looks like
a poop.
He looks like a postal delivery man.
Yeah.
But worse, because I actually think the U.S. Postal Service outfits are kind of cute. Not cute.
I could see you walking around in that. Actually.
Thank you. I'm wearing a shorts onesie
today.
Wearing
a onesie today, and it's like 65 degrees out.
It was a little colder than I anticipated.
Christ.
Not my greatest. Yeah. And then the women's side. A lot of people, obviously, after last year's bodysuit, watching what Serena wears.
I like Serena's outfit.
This is the Virgil Abloh sort of special kit. You think you like it?
I like it.
You like it? You think it's good?
I like it.
I like the mesh a lot.
Yeah. And the couple of the Fila outfits. What's amazing
to me... The Fila outfits look good.
...is that the companies, just so everybody knows, they don't pick this like 2 weeks ago, you know, and go, oh, that's cool. Let's put them in this.
Yeah.
This is done years in advance. Yeah. Like, for example, I can tell you Karolina Pliskova's Fila kit. She knew exactly what she was wearing. in February this year. So she'd already done her filming and her pictures in Miami in February for her entire line for the year. So the year is done. So you can't, you know, so everyone's like, oh, why are they? And a lot, and I know a lot of people are pissed off that, you know, everyone's in the same gear. It's like, why don't they have separate stuff for the players? And when they're playing against each other and they're in the same outfit. That's the way it is, kids. Like, that's what they're trying to sell that outfit in the stores. It just so happens that Nike,
the
for
same
example,
thing
has a lot of players.
Bothers me less.
Pam Shriver hates it.
Pam Shriver, a lot of people hate it.
She hates it.
Our friend Craig Shapiro, who hosts another really good podcast under review, he hates it. I don't mind it as much. I just mind the eye-bleeding outfits. So on to continue on that note, the Fila, shout out to our creative director, Daniela Del Persio, who shot all those things with Kaya. I think the Fila stuff looks really great.
I think Fila have done a great job this
year. Me too. I think it's really great. The Adidas stuff I find kind of bland.
Well, they're German. I mean, don't take offense out there, Germany.
No, but listen,
but it's just how they are.
Speaking to your point about knowing well in advance, Racket Magazine is doing a capsule collection with Adidas.
Cool.
Tennis.
Adidas.
For you. Thank you. Adidas. For the U.S. Open 2020. So not only do we know.
Exactly
this
my point.
I mean, I haven't seen all the final stuff.
But isn't it amazing how.
But it's 2020.
You'll turn up in. The U.S. Open 2020, and everyone will have the same color scheme. It's like, what the fuck? Did you guys all get together and go, let's go black and white?
Maybe
all
they
of
did.
Us.
Maybe did they?
Seriously,
did.
It's amazing how it happens. I'm like, what? Everyone's in fluoro? What? You know? So it's like a Nixon. Like it's like a Watergate. Do they have like speakers and they're going fluoro?
It's happening fluoro. It's neon this year, everyone.
Neon.
Hold on to your hats.
Yeah
I kind of I don't.
Right, so you
I don't
like
think
it.
As a yeah. I think. Generally, the Nike stuff is getting the most buzz in a bad way, but I am here to defend it because I think it's really good. Uniqlo, I don't know. That's just a train wreck. What happened?
I don't know.
Like, I don't need Fed.
There's some players like a Sharapova, Serena, Roger, I'm sure Nole to some extent, have a say in what they're seeing and giving it approval. So Mr. Federer is quite the metrosexual. Okay.
That's not a thing we say anymore. Now we say like...
What do we say?
I don't know, fashionable. Because everyone's metrosexual now. Haven't you noticed everyone's queer? Yeah, it's great.
Listen, Matt Ebden is not. Well, no, actually, no, not Matt Ebden. I'm thinking of Johnny Millman, you know. But listen, here's the deal. He's got to have some say in what. I can't imagine he put that on and went, Anna Wintour would love this.
I mean, look, Anna, get involved.
Yeah, true.
He needs an intervention. Anna. He looks so bad.
Anyway, but he still
shocking.
Looks good.
Well, his game looks good, sure.
All right, just to really sort of sidestep you here, it was somebody asked sex during tournaments. I'm like, hell yeah, you have sex during tournaments.
I mean...
It depends. I'll give you an example. I won't give you my example, but
great.
I'm just giving you examples in general. If you win and you had sex... You were going to have sex again because you want to win. It's all it's about, winning. Okay, and if you won a tournament and you didn't have sex that week, you are not having sex ever again when you play tennis.
But I think what the question was getting at is like, remember this headline from the UK papers way long ago because Boris Becker like failed to, you know where I'm going with this, I think. I never forget it. The headline was, "Too much sex beats Big Boris," because the implication was that Boris Becker was, and we all know that he likes a cocktail waitress and a flight attendant, given who he's, you know, fathered.
But we love Boris.
I love Boris. I, as a confirmed lesbian, I find him, like, devastatingly handsome.
I know, you
handsome.
Actually have to, you
it's
actually
weird.
Have told me that. That's,
it's so strange.
Story.
He's very attractive to me. I mean, I'm not the only one. Like, women all over the world.
Clearly.
Yeah. Anyway, and I like his taste in women. He's got great taste in women.
It's your type.
Totally. Anyway, Boris... The headline was, "Too much sex beats Big Boris," meaning off the court, he was partying, depleting his energy, maybe.
I think what it should have, if he was going out and partying, I don't think the sex was the problem. I think maybe he'd had a drink or two.
Other things.
I mean, usually when you drink too much, it's not so good for your tennis. Yeah. Sex is definitely not, it can be a positive or a negative. And as I said, if you do it and you win the next day, clearly you will forever and ever say, oh, that's fine.
Subject. No, not to go too deep on this, but no, gross. The collegiate NCAA scene was, especially at like big tournaments, it was sort of like an orgy. I mean, it was just like, what is going on? Like, who's hooking up with who?
No offense, but those are college players, you know?
I'm just saying,
everyone's
like fit and bored. You know, we got lots of time on our hands we're like,
okay, so
you know,
you're basically saying that's
it was fun. It was a good time.
You went to college. I did not. OK, there you go. You've answered
there
were
some
question.
A lot of downsides playing college tennis. Okay. That was not one of them.
All right. So why don't tournaments show pre and post match interviews was one question as well. And, okay, so being in television, I can tell you, a lot of it has to do with trying to get commercials in. So sometimes producers or directors will just say, look, we've got to get some commercials in here. We don't really care about the post-match interview. It could be somebody, you know, that's doing the interview that you don't want on your television screen or... There's lots of reasons. You know, ESPN sometimes will be up against a hard out, we call it. So at 6 p.m., we got to get to SportsCenter or whatever, and it's 5:59. We don't have time to show the post-match interview or the trophy ceremony. And, you know, we get so much shit when we don't show the trophy ceremony, which I'm also very against. And you watch a player play for 2.5, 3 hours, and you want to hear them talk after a match and thank their people. But sometimes, you know, and as you know, Caitlin in live television or – television schedules, you can't push them back. So there's somebody that could be wanting that sports center that doesn't give a shit about tennis.
And they're like, why is this starting 5 minutes late?
Yeah, so, you know, that's often the reason why.
But I will shout out the streaming services, TC Plus, ESPN Plus.
They show those.
A lot of the tournaments and the radio. We don't talk a lot about the radio, but I think the radio coverage does a lot. Great job. This week you could be listening to Radio Roland Garros. They have a lot of interviews with players. Mm-hmm. They cut to a lot of the press conferences. Mm-hmm. So all the things I just mentioned, they will oftentimes not only show, you know, the entirety of the match, including the post-match interview, but also they will show a lot of press conferences, which I think is really interesting. I mean, you know, we watch LeBron in press conferences. We watch basketball. We watch a lot of other stuff. Yep. Like, I think it could and should be part of the culture where we're getting to hear what the players think, because I think it's really fascinating.
I agree. One of the other questions was sometimes about, you know, the TVs are getting so good now, you know, with HD and 5G.
Yeah, you can see someone's like blackheads from across the court.
It's not a joke, actually. I was told one time when I started doing television, and remember, everybody, wear your makeup because it's HD TV. FYI, you can see every freckle on your face. So, you know, one of the things was, what about the camera angles and how does that happen? I can tell you there's some times where people build a center court or a stadium, and they don't think about where the fuck they're going to put the cameras.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you that that's a fact.
You can tell which ones.
And I don't want to get into who exactly, but you guys know when you're watching television and you're watching tennis and you're like, Jesus Christ, this camera is so far away from the court. Yeah. Didn't think about that, did they, when they decided to build the stadium? So they're ding-dongs. And, you know, an ESPN will go and they'll do an on-site check before. So when they're building a stadium, they'll actually, ESPN will go, or whoever's covering the tournament for whomever, will go and say, yeah, this is a great spot here. This is good. This is the angle we want. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's too close. Sometimes it's too far away. But boy, oh boy, when you're making a stadium, people, you got to think about that.
A lot of them on TV are too high.
Oh, it's so bad.
And the thing that I love, and ESPN does this a lot, which I really appreciate, is they put the camera, or at least cut to the one angle where it's behind one of the players. And even though you can only really see one of the players and sort of in the far distance the other player, you get to see the speed of the court and you get to see the size of the court. I think that camera angle is underused. I've been saying it for years because I really passionately believe in it. And I think it does the closest to taking people at home into the sort of tournament experience.
It does. I'm not a lover of that angle.
I love it.
But, you know, that's a perfect example of why it's really important to show different angles when you're showing tennis, because some people like it and some people don't.
I also just think having the variety gets you to understand sort of both the size of the court, but also, you know, gives you a... I think tennis is one of those sports that's much better in person. And I think the better we can do to show it on TV, the more fans it'll have.
So we're talking during the French Open. What do you think about the Sunday starts of the Grand Slams?
I like them. It's a full day of weekend tennis that I can watch on my laptop.
It's more money
when I'm not
for the
work.
Tournament.
I think it's great.
Yeah. So
did the players not like it? Is there any reason other tournaments don't do it?
I think a lot of players. There's a bit of a pushback because it just feels like, oh shit, you know, we're having to start this earlier than
you're
we're ready,
from another
or
town
coming
or
from
something.
Another tournament. Uh-huh. So that's where it gets a little bit difficult. I personally would rather them just start on Monday.
Yeah.
But as you said, you know, monetarily, like Wimbledon's never going to change. It'll start on Monday, but they don't have a Sunday, which they're taking away a weekend day.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
You know,
the middle Sunday they don't famously
but
they don't.
Do you know
play.
How much players love that?
Yeah.
I mean, you have no idea how much players appreciate that extra day of just kind of like being able to switch it off, because you don't switch off even if you're in the tournament, but boy, for an hour or two, you can maybe switch off a bit more than you can in another Grand Slam. And it's just that beautiful, wonderful Sunday, which is usually a really pretty day. Mm-hmm. And you just relax, you know. We appreciate it as journalists, I can tell you that.
You were telling me that Racquet Magazine, we usually have a party in London. I'm still trying to figure out what we're going to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like...
Send in your suggestions.
You said you should do it on middle Saturday because everyone will come and get hammered.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's the spirit. I meant it. I was like,
well,
that is the
spirit. Players out of the tournament will come and get hammered.
Great.
But the ones in the tournament will probably stay a little bit more.
Well, listen, Nick Kyrgios came to our last party and he was in the tournament before he was out of the tournament.
Well,
so we all know. Shout
Nicky.
Out to him.
That's shout out to Nicky.
Yeah.
Okay. We love Nick.
I love him.
There are parts of him that I wish were changed, but overall, he's great for the game.
He's great for the game.
Get his shit together. When are we going to let Letts in? I want Letts to be played. We've had this discussion.
Uh-huh.
I want to see Letts played. What do you
Fine. Yeah. Fine with that. They do it in college. I think
simple.
It's fine.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, a lot of people want to know about the coaching changes over this year, and we've seen a lot, particularly in the women's game. I don't think the men's.
Wim Fassett. We're talking
Kamau Murray. Sloane Stephens. Yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot of listen, here's the deal with coaching. It's tough. I mean, it's like a marriage. It's like a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, if you lose a match, for example, or, you know, you got to blame it on somebody.
Yeah.
So it's often the coach, you know, or sometimes they just give you a shitty game plan and it didn't work. Or sometimes you get on the practice court, you don't really like what they're practicing with you.
Or sometimes the coaches ask for a ton more money, which I think is what apparently happened with Sasha Bajin and...
Really?
Which
is that
apparently,
what you heard?
I've heard that the Sasha Bajin Naomi Osaka thing was partly because of money.
Wow, interesting. I did not know that, and I can tell you. I mean, I know a lot of gossip, obviously, because I know a few people out there. Mm-hmm. Look, the bottom line is that, you know, relationships are one and done is sometimes, you know, and coaching is just the same. It's like, it's not easy. Sometimes, as you said, money becomes a part of the equation, as it often does, and I can give you a couple of people like that. But others, it's like the coach is just done with the player too. I mean, somebody tweeted, you know, I can't believe somebody hasn't worked on Ostapenko's serve. She just double faulted 16 times French Open first round and lost first round again.
Is that true? 16? Was that real?
16.
Wow.
I think it was 16.
And yeah, that's like my service
someone said,
game
you know,
days.
How can you not work on her serve as a coach? I'm like, just let's flip that around for a second, okay? There is a possibility that the player's a freaking pain in the ass and doesn't want to change anything as well. I don't know. I haven't been on the court with her.
Yeah.
But... you know,
but it's not only the coach.
Can't imagine her being the easiest person to work with.
She seems like she's got some strong opinions.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's about the player. If they don't want to change it, then they're not going to change it. And under pressure, they'll always go back to what was
is most comfortable. Mm. And, you know, in some cases with coaching, it's logistics.
Yeah. Sometimes it's, with me and Pliskova, for example, I mean, it was tough. You know, I work full time with ESPN at the Grand Slams. And, you know, she wanted a little bit more sort of continuity. And when I brought Conchita onto the... into the team last US Open, you know, Conchi was a lot more available, you know, so it's just like made a little bit more sense for Carolina to keep her on board on a full-time basis. And so it was, you know, then I was able to sort of let her go on that.
Yeah. But, I mean, she's done very well.
She's done
under
great,
both of you
know, and she's definitely, for me, she's starting to look like the favorite of the French. I mean, you know, winning Rome is always an indicator for me who will win the French Open.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a competitive field, which it was in Rome.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, that's why Rafa and Pliskova now. I mean, I did, you know, Halep's still my slight favorite at the French is because she's so good. Once she gets her teeth into the French Open, she's so good on the clay. And she suffered such a tough out. But, you know, Carolina has the weapons and she can beat anyone. So, you know, there's no doubt. And Conchi's a great influence. And I think the thing that was passed on to her by myself and now the baton's been taken from Conchita's passion for the game. You know, run for the balls, get after it, fight. Yeah. And she's won a lot of matches in the last 7 months.
Yeah.
She's had three sets.
Very good.
In three sets, losing the first set. And that is something that she didn't really have before was that, I mean, she always had desire and fight, but now I think the desire and the fight has ratcheted up quite.
Finding that extra gear.
Yeah. So there you go. So sometimes it's a little bit of logistics, sometimes it's money, and sometimes it's just, you know what, you just need to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a change sometimes. Mm. All right, we got only a few minutes left. So what are the more sort of tantalizing questions that we got from readers? And again, thank you guys so much for sending these in. We'll try to do this on a periodic basis because it's fun for us to obviously opine.
Somebody asked about Wozniacki. I'm having to deal with the
rheumatoid arthritis.
I mean, it's a bitch. It's a nightmare. And she's struggling. And she's obviously over the last few years has really had to deal with a lot of injuries, particularly to her knee. But, you know, this is just an ongoing situation for her. And I think that here's a perfect example when to retire.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, she's a great player who's won a tremendous amount of tournaments, who's now engaged, obviously thinking about having a family, getting married. And she's not having the success that she's used to.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with injuries at the same time, it's kind of like, fuck this. You're like, this is too hard, you know, and it's disappointing. And and she practices and works out so hard and so much that at some point it's like, okay, it's just getting too much now for me. And it's sad. And so... listen, let's hope that she has a better back half of this year because she deserves that as such a great ambassador for women's tennis. And, you know, hopefully she sticks around for a lot longer because she's such a great name. But, you know, at the same time, she's also a friend of mine. I want her to be happy.
Yeah.
So if it means stopping and, you know, getting on with her life. And look, she's got a nice little pad here in New York.
Yeah, she does.
Her a lot more.
Why don't you, Carolyn, where's my invite to the rooftop cocktail party?
Yeah, well, let's work on that. Maybe for her retirement party.
Maybe for her retirement party. And also, I want to see Francesca Schiavone a little bit more on her corner, loving that she's coaching Woz.
I don't know how much she's going to be around now once she's on the grass and et cetera, but we'll see. But it's nice to see more women coaches.
I love that.
You know, players are now starting to go, they can think. Oh, they've got actually pretty good ideas. I mean,
turns out their vaginas don't get in the way of their brains.
Who would have thought? So, yeah, so it's nice to see that.
I read this amazing story. I'm going to get her name wrong, but this 16-year-old who just won a sort of wild card first round match, one-handed backhand, and people are asking her, as we, you know, we love one-handed backhands here at the Racket Magazine podcast. A friend of mine was like, oh, did you see this girl? Did you see her match? I was like, no, but turns out she has one-handed backhand. And she goes, yeah, Amelie Mauresmo taught me this backhand. Why would I listen to anybody else?
Yes.
Like, love that.
Come on, I'm doing a high five.
No, I'm doing it for Federer. I'm doing it because of Pete Sampras. It's like, no, Amelie Mauresmo. She set the,
Oh, come on.
Love it.
There was no better, more Shut beautiful, up. Other than maybe.
Justine's was better.
No, Justine's one-hander was not pretty.
It was the prettiest one-hander.
No.
Agree to disagree.
Okay, that's fine. But I'll get shit from people. They'll tweet me. But it was a little hectic, that one-hander. Okay, it was a little head twisting all over the place.
Yeah, it was like Richard's Gasquet's. It's a long, flowing stroke.
It was not that flowy. It was a little discombobulated and a little bit. It was an unbelievable one-hander. But when we're talking beauty of the one-hander, like just the flowing one-hander, Mauresmo, Suarez-Navarro. Okay. I mean,
round here
Francesca's
we call her Rambo.
Was a little bit more like muscled, you know, and that's the same as Enon's. Enon was a little bit...
muscly.
Now, I had a lovely one-hander. That's where you're supposed to come in and say, yours is beautiful,
yours was beautiful. And yours is beautiful, and you also did some really nice re-engineering on mine.
Oh, well,
thank you for that.
It needed...
All right, okay.
Why don't you just
take the compliment, you dick?
It's good.
Speaking of dicks, my favorite thing, we were talking a little bit earlier about...
it's your favorite saying, actually. Bag of dicks.
Eat a bag of dicks.
Oh, God, so disgusting.
It's disgusting. That's why it's a good insult. One thing that I loved, Courtney Nguyen, our friend, WTA Insider, Racket Magazine contributing editor, she was talking about how shitty it is that not only do these female athletes get all these abuse about having a bad day and an off day, but really we don't talk about like menstruation.
Oh, that's what
periods.
We want to talk about.
Oh my God. Periods are a fucking nightmare. If guys had periods, you guys would be in the hospital. You'd be crying. You'd be getting like IVs. You'd be getting medicine. We'd have like national holidays. I mean, this shit is real and it's raw. I got into a fight with my college tennis coach, one of the worst coaches I've ever played under, by the way.
What's his name?
Blake Starkey. What a terrible coach he was.
Dick.
Truly, dick. And I remember one time saying, oh my God, you look, I'm really having a rough day. Like, I have such a bad period. Like, I can't play. I think we were in Stillwater, Oklahoma, playing Oklahoma State or something like that.
Oh, God.
And he turns to me and he goes, gross. Can you not talk about that? I was like, listen, you're the coach of a women's tennis team with a charge of managing 10 girls between the ages of 18 and 22.
That are all having periods.
You can't handle the fact that I'm talking about my period. I wasn't saying, like, anything horrifically offensive. It's not a lot different than I was saying, like, oh, man, I twisted my ankle and I'm really having a rough time. Like, hey, can you sit me?
You didn't say, hey, my uterus is falling out. That's how it feels.
Maybe something closer to that, actually. But look, can we not have a conversation about our periods?
Like, let's have a conversation about it, because I can tell you for a fact that my first ever Olympics, very excited. My best ever chance to win a medal at the Olympics was definitely this year. I was playing doubles with Nicole Bradke. I'd lost my singles, and I was getting ready to go and play my first round. And cramps. Just all of a sudden, I was like, oh, my God, I feel so terrible. Oh, wow. You know, everybody out there who's a woman's going, oh, I know how you feel.
Yeah.
And it got worse and worse and worse. I was on the next minute, 20 minutes later, I'm on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm just writhing in pain. I mean, it's just so terrible. And it's the first time that had ever really happened to me. Mm-hmm. It's happened subsequently like 10 times since then, where it's gotten so bad where I wanted to die. But I was literally I was throwing up. My doubles partner, Nicole's like, oh, my God, are you okay? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We got called to go and play our match, and I couldn't play. I couldn't play my first round of the Olympics.
An Olympic match.
I was rushed to the hospital. Yeah. I was in so much pain. And finally, they couldn't give me anything at the courts because of the drug policies at the Olympics. I had to go to the Olympic hospital, which was a 40-minute drive, as you can imagine how terrible that was. And finally, they gave me some like Valium or something, just calmed me down and relaxed me. I woke up. It felt like I'd been hit by a truck, literally.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happened immediately after that. I went to my gynecologist and I said, listen, I don't know what the fuck you can do about this because I'm a woman and this isn't changing. But you need to help me here because this can never happen to me again.
I
could be
Olympic
walking onto
match.
A goddamn Grand Slam final and that could have happened.
Yeah.
And I said, I cannot have that. I cannot afford for that to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went on the pill and, you know, it certainly helped in that regard. And a lot of players are on it because of it. And I know a lot of, obviously, a lot of lesbian players are on it.
Yeah.
And it's not like, well, I'm worrying about getting pregnant.
Yeah.
But this was
just
to monitor and regulate and also keep the pain down.
Yeah. Well, Courtney was saying not only should we be like super mindful about like all the stuff that's going on, you know, out with women's bodies in particular that we don't know about who are professional athletes of all sports, but also the lack of empathy or the sort of like, you know,
from
guys
male
checking
coaches.
In being like, hey, oh, how bad could it be? And your response, I thought, was the most perfect thing I'd ever heard.
How about this, guys? I'm going to kick you in the dick. Okay. Once a month. For 4 days. Yeah?
Dick kicks.
It's like one time a day for 4 days. Nah, two. Let's do 2 days because it's always 2 days that are just horrendous for all of us.
Yeah.
It's like 2 days of our month every month is just ruined. Okay? So for 2 days every month, I'm going to kick you in the dick and let's see how you feel about that.
We've got a fever and the only prescription is dick kicks.
Dick kicks. It's so true. It's so true.
It's so true.
But, you know, I've had this conversation with Andrea Pekovic. She also, you know, struggles with a little Sam Stoza. I mean, I'm just like outing everybody's bad periods. But another thing is I had a problem one time where I had to pull out of, I think I got through the match, but I had such terrible back pain that I, like, it seized up on me and I couldn't work out why. And it didn't happen to me very often. And, you know, I think I got through the match. But I realized that it was the next day. Was my period. And so every time my lower back got super tight
you
and
knew.
Like that, I knew.
Yeah.
And you know, also had back problems because of it. So yeah, let's bring it out there and talk about because it happens all the time, people.
Well, this is just the kind of...
Don't be a dick, Dick.
Don't be a dick. This is kind of refreshing honesty you're going to get on this second season of the Racket Magazine podcast. We have some insanely good interviews. We're going to do it through the tour finals like we did last year, and then we'll take another break and collect more stories. I'm super excited to get to some of these interviews. Keep sending in your questions. Thank you guys so much for your feedback.
And I know there was a couple we didn't
get to all of them, but we'll try to work them into upcoming episodes because we love talking to you guys. Obviously, we have opinions.
We definitely have opinions.
All right. On that note, Renee, it's lovely to be back in studio with you. You guys stay tuned. This season is going to melt your face.
Thanks, guys. We love you.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Rogerian and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.